Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts Bob Dancer and Michael Shackelford. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's in the Video Poker Hall of Fame, and he has written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the Video Poker for Winners computer software. Michael Shackelford is the force behind the websites Wizard of Odds, Wizard of Vegas, and Wizard of Macau. An actuary by profession, Michael has been analyzing the whole gamut of casino games since 1995. His Wizard of Odds website explains the best strategies for 140 different casino games. Michael is also the author of Gambling 102, The Best Strategies for All Casino Games, and is a former adjunct professor of gaming math at UNLV. The goal of the show is that, by listening, you will be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Mike.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
I'm Mike Shackelford.
Tonight our guest is Colin Jones, a man who helped found and lead a group of Christian blackjack players that were able to extract a reported total of $3.2 million from casino. A surprise guest is Ben Crawford, who was Colin's partner in this endeavor. Although they called themselves the church team, this group found some fame with a documentary called The Holy Rollers, The True Story of Card-Counting Christians. We'll be talking to Colin and Ben shortly. Interestingly, Shaq and I have very different opinions about this group. I have absolutely no problem with a group of strong believers using their brains in a casino. And Michael seems to feel that people with strong religious beliefs should be out there trying to save the world rather than spending time in the casino. We'll try to sort this out as we go. Last week, near the end of the show, we talked a little bit about gambling on the election. So who our choices are in the election is not what this show is about, but making money by gambling on it is. So Shaq, what's the current update on this?
Last week, you may remember the line on Obama was minus 300. Today, it is minus 238. So Obama has definitely taken a beating because of the debate and polling that came after that. The line on Romney is plus 212. So if you split the difference, it implies that Obama has a chance of 69% of winning. And at this point, I don't know if this is going to be a great time to buy Obama or if things are going to get even worse for him. This is just a hard race to handicap at this point, so I don't know what to say.
Now, in the past week, there were some polls out there, some of which said that Romney was either tied or leading Obama. So how does this correspond to Obama having a 69% chance of winning if the polls say they're tied?
You're absolutely right. And one major reason is that the Electoral College favors Obama. Sometimes it favors the Republicans, but just the way the math is this time, it cuts Obama's way. If you look at all the states that are not competitive, Obama already has 237 electoral votes and Romney has 191. You only need to get to 270, so Obama needs only 33 more and Romney needs 79 more. So Obama is still a lot closer to that finish line. So if the race were held today, I think that Obama would have a very good chance of winning, but it's not being held today, so who knows what will change in the next, I think, 29 days.
All right, so we'll have reports as we go until the election. All right, in gambling news recently, there was an item about poker superstar Phil Ivey. Apparently, Ivey was playing Baccarat in London at Jentings Crockford's, one of the nicest clubs in England, in late August. Now, Ivy did extremely well, winning £7.3 million, which is roughly equivalent to $11.5 million. The casino has refused to pay so far. They seem to feel that Ivy won dishonestly, but they have not been able to discover what it was that he did. As of now, he hasn't been accused of anything, and he hasn't been paid. I personally find this stunning. When you play in a casino and win, you should be paid. If you're not going to be paid when you win, but you still have to pay when you lose, then the odds are stacked against you so badly you simply shouldn't play. Maybe you should give up gambling altogether and take up bowling. In the United States, we have the presumption of innocence. Now, I thought they had a similar presumption in England. Casinos certainly have the right to protect themselves against cheating, if and when it occurs, if they can clearly show that cheating went on. I have no knowledge of whether or not Ivy was doing anything underhanded. The suspicion is he was probably doing something, or there were suspicions wouldn't be there, but I don't know. But the casinos had a month and a half to figure out what the cheating was, if any, and they haven't been able to do this. That's long enough. Arrest him if you have evidence, or pay him if you don't. The Never Never Land, where they withhold your money just because they feel like it, is reason for all gamblers to become nervous. Shaq, do you have any comment?
I agree 100%. This sounds like the kind of stunt that an internet casino would pull. But in the world of legitimate gambling,
Crockford's is definitely legitimate.
Yes, absolutely. They have to presume that it was a fair game and that he won fair and square. And they've had a month and a half to come up with a case against him. I've heard nothing. And therefore, I strongly feel that they should pay the man.
Ben, Colin, do you have any thoughts on this before we get into your segment?
I don't. Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good. So since you don't have any comments on that, I'll introduce you anyway. Colin Jones and Ben Crawford are the blackjack pros behind blackjackapprenticeship.com. Their team, known as the Church Team, is documented in the movie Holy Rollers, The True Story of Card-Counting Christians. Today, Colin and Ben teach others how to play blackjack. Colin and Ben, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
For those who watched the movie a while ago, Colin is the taller one, and Ben is shorter and half Asian. So,
right.
Good. So, until we get to know whose voice is who, if you could say, hi, I'm Ben on this, and before you answer, that would be useful. Now, your church team was a bunch of card-counting Christians. To some, this sounds inherently contradictory. How did the team come about?
Yeah, it's kind of a funny story. This is Ben, and Colin and I were both the people that started this particular team. And it's actually kind of a simple story, I guess, and kind of, I think it's maybe slightly unintuitive to what I've heard some people assume, but we both attended a pretty standard churches at that time, and some of the people that had heard about us playing blackjack, we were kind of in the process of quitting and leaving. This was back when everyone and their mother was investing in property, so we were trying to get into the same thing. But some people from our church groups heard of what we were doing and kind of got excited about it and asked if we could teach them. And we said, well, maybe. And eventually we showed a few people some things. And the topic came up, well, they wanted to play, but they didn't have money. And we had money. So we started funding people and teaching people. And, you know, that's how it started. It didn't start off trying to create a team of people from our churches. But that was our social network at the time. And, you know, you fast forward 3 or 4 years, and we have, you know, 30 plus investors with more than $1 million worth of funds in a given bankroll. And, you know, at one time, I think we had 30 players at a time. So it kind of got a little crazy, but that was how it started, at least to answer your question.
Okay. Well, let me apologize in advance for asking some tough questions, but your movie is.
We love it.
Well, good. Well, your movie is called The Holy Rollers, and you call yourselves the Church Team. So the way I look at that is that you brought this up first. And normally I don't go around attacking someone's religion unless they open the subject first. So I think that let me tell you where I'm coming from. I think that I hate religion as much as you guys hate casinos. So that's where this line of questioning is going to be coming from. So
the line is drawn in the sand. All right.
This will make it interesting for the listener. Huh?
Okay. So, the way I see Christianity is you guys are like God's ambassadors here on earth. And the way you chose to use your time to try to make the earth a better place and to bring more souls to Jesus is you were spent, what, 3 years playing blackjack on a full-time basis. So what did you accomplish for the greater glory of God with that time?
Man, so that's Michael, I'm assuming, asking that.
Yeah, that's me.
That's a good question, Michael. I don't know. You know, I can answer your question. There's some things that I have, in some ways I have answers to your question, and in some ways I actually don't. You know, it's, I guess just to clarify, first of all, you know, we didn't make the documentary. Like, we agreed to the documentary being made, and in some ways we actually helped support and fund the project because I did like the idea and the story of our team. But, you know, this was just an authentic telling or story of our lives. It wasn't really something we were trying to advertise necessarily or encourage other people to convert to or anything like that, just to clarify. But, you know, it's interesting. We were forced to ask the same questions you were asking for most of the time that we were a part of the team, because everyone kind of threw that at us. And to share a little bit of my background, I think Colin has a similar background. You know, we went to school, and for that matter, I went to a Bible college, and I always thought that I would be a missionary. My wife was going to school to be a nurse. And after she did that, I thought I would go to school to be a doctor so that we can go and help people overseas or become pastors or something like that. Because at that time, that's what I thought. That's what I thought the only way to really love God was, to be a pastor or to help the poor or enter into ministry, quote unquote. But through the process of this whole blackjack thing, kind of learning about a more well-rounded viewpoint of what I think Christianity or life or business or family is, a lot of those things were really challenged for me. So, you know, there were things in my day-to-day that I would say really did glorify God, but quite honestly, there was also times and things in my day throughout the team before and after that didn't glorify God. So without knowing exactly what specifics you're talking about, you know, blackjack as a whole, like many things, I think is actually somewhat neutral. You know, it's hard. Some people believe that there's good and bad things themselves, you know, and more my belief is that I don't think it's quite that simple. So I don't know if that answers your question at all. I'm not trying to dodge it. I'm just trying to, you know, share with you the difficulty we do.
And I'll chime in. This is Colin. You know, where we were at 22 years old, is the last job both Ben and I had was waiting tables, which I don't think is a glorious job, you know, in God's eyes. But we need to pay the bills. And then we're like, look into card counting, or I don't know, I think Ben read a book. And the thought was, oh, wow, maybe we don't need to wait tables for minimum wage to pay the bills. And so, you know, in our spare time with a little bit of savings, started doing this and thinking maybe we could make about minimum wage, and pretty quickly we're making a lot more. And, you know, so we're asking ourselves the same questions along the way, but it for a lot of people on the team, it became a way to actually do a lot of ministry, or whatever you'd call it, save the world, in their definition of saving the world, you know, maybe 40 hours a week and play blackjack 10 hours a week to be able to fund that. Whether that justifies it or not, you know, is another question. But that was kind of the way a lot of people approached it. And I think I have a little bit different view of, you know, what makes a job holy or unholy, or, you know, honoring to God or unhonoring to God. But for a lot of people, it was, hey, here's a way that I can fund what actually is important to me in terms of, you know, serving God, not having to work a 40-hour a week job. I don't know if that answers it at all. Yeah.
Well, thank you. I would say that there's nothing to be ashamed about waiting tables, as that's good, honest work where you're providing a service to society. And meanwhile, the way I would look at card counting full-time is that you're only consuming from society and you're giving nothing back to it. And furthermore, the whole notion of I need to do this to make money to, you know, fund my other interests is, can you give me a Bible passage that supports that kind of Robin Hood mentality?
Sorry, Ben. To your first question, Michael, I actually really agree with you. You know, I mean, it's actually an interesting case. And I believe it's a biblical case that Christians ought to be doing work that is for something greater than money. Now, at the time, I didn't really see that, you know, and I don't think I had really had any examples of that. I more believe that Christian work was something that was, you kind of go to a place and you do Christian language. So I actually am a lot more on your side now, which I don't think I would do this. But not only would I not do that, there's actually a lot of things I wouldn't do. So it's actually a really tough question that I think we need to ask ourselves, which is, what is work for, you know? And if you go back to the account of why God created work back in Genesis 1, you know, in a garden, like, well, what should we be doing with our days and hours and our hands? And that's a very tough and convicting question. So in regards to your second question about is there any verse that justifies us being Robin Hoods? No, not that I know of.
Okay, well, I appreciate your honesty, and I think I'll let you off the hook with that, and we'll go on to some softer questions.
Well, softer or not, good. There were relevant questions, and then let's talk about some other things. Now, I saw the Holy Roller movie. I enjoyed it. I recommend it. I wrote in my blog this week, I wrote about it. But I've never been part of a team, and blackjack is not my gambling game of choice, but the ups and downs of gaming life are fairly depicted. I saw your highs and lows depending on your scores, and I thought, yep, that's what it's like. Now, you didn't actually make this movie, but you were part of it. If you could make another movie about that part of your life, how would you be doing it differently?
Colin, I don't know if you want to answer this. I can go for it. This is Ben again. I felt like one problem that I had with the movie, so I guess if I were to make it, I would want a lot of kind of the questions that Michael is bringing up to really be addressed, not just for the players themselves or myself to have to answer on the screen, but also to the audience. You know, there was the thing I love about the documentary. The documentary, to me, one of the downfalls of it, there's a lot of benefits of it, but one of the downfalls of it is it kind of sensationalized the dollar and the win and the loss and a lot of just kind of normal casino stories, which are interesting to me. But the thing that I personally found the most interesting and difficult to navigate through, what were these deep questions of why should we work? And I think those are tough questions, and I think just the idea of a team of card-counting Christians or people that claim either of those titles is enough to really stir up. People have an opinion, you know? And I think it's that formation of opinion that shows we all have a belief about that and we all have a reason why we all go to work. So that's what I would love to see. If I was to redo the movie, that's what I'd do.
In the movie...
Wait,
go ahead.
We're not going to shut out Colin the Hall. If you're going to speak up, Colin, you're going to have to maybe be more... So far, Ben's been the alpha male. So you're going to...
Well, we kind of looked at it and each said, well, these are the ones I'm interested in asking. So far, you've asked all the ones Ben was interested in answering.
All right. So Mike, try to ask a Colin question, not that we know the parameters of that.
All right.
Ask something numbers related.
Okay, here's something numbers related. I was going to ask this one a little later, but I'm very interested in how revenue is to be split up in a blackjack team because I was an investor in one once. And I'd be interested to know the formula for how you compensated both the managers, the investors, and the players. And I know in the movie there was a scene where things weren't going so well and you changed the incentive system to the players, but it wasn't clear to me what the change was made. So can you address, how the proceeds got split up?
Yeah, sure. So, to preface it, we probably tried 10 things over the 10 years that we played, and the documentary showed about 3 years of those 10. But during the time of the documentary, players got paid just basically an hourly wage. Whether they won or lost, it was based on a percentage of EV, what we determined the value of the game to be. And then the rest got split between investors and management. And player investors got a greater sh- share. But we realized that wasn't a healthy, the best thing for a player actually was to lose money, because when you're losing money, you tend to get more hours in. When you're winning, that's when you get backed off more often. And so we realized it's a fundamentally unhealthy business model when employees are incentivized for what's, you know, what's not best for the business. And so we changed it so that players still got something. And it's funny because I didn't know the MIT team guys or, you know, the Highlanders back then. I've met them since then, and sounds like they all kind of settled on the same thing. But we paid, you know, a percentage so people could basically pay the bills, but the greater share, the players went from the profits, and that came out of, I think out of mostly management and some from the investors' percentage.
Can you break down the percentages a little more? Like on the team that I was part of, the managers got 20%, the investors got 40%, and the players got 40%. Did you have anything simple like that?
Yeah. Our first team, it was 10% to managers, and then some crazy sliding scale depending on how many hours were played. And then at the documentary, investors got, I think, 50%, and players got 20%, and investors or management got 30%, or maybe it was 40-40-20. And then we changed it to I can't remember. It was like 15% up front to players, and then maybe 20% to players on the back. So then there's the back end, which is 100%, not 100% of all the money made, but 100% of profits. And it was, again, maybe 40-40-20, 20 to players, 40 to investors, 40 to management, something like that. Because management paid all the you know, accounting and lawyer fees and stuff like that. So I think that's what the cut was towards the end of the documentary. And it changed probably 3 or 4 times during the team.
It's really just a function of supply and demand. You know, if money is really hard to come by, investors can get a higher percentage. If players are really hard to come by, then they can get a higher percentage. And if management is serving a really valuable function of the team, then, you know, we've seen those numbers all change.
Very good. So if the managers need to buy a new house, and is it the managers who vote on these percentages? Or is it,
no, it was everybody agreed.
It was a vote. All right, good. So good. That sounds like as close as you can get it, because it kept changing. On our August 23rd show, Gambling with an Edge, we interviewed Richard Munchkin. I saw him last night. He says hi to both of you. As did Max Rubin, who was also there. But on the August 23rd show, we discussed a case where you, Ben, came back to your teammates after the fact and told them that you hadn't been entirely honest in reporting your losses. What happened, and how did this all work out?
Yeah, so not entirely honest is a very generous way of saying that. for those of you guys who haven't heard the story, I was very dishonest, actually. So this is a story that for me happened, I guess it was about 8 years ago now. And, you know, it's, we had a team, this is actually before our current blackjack team, and I was playing with 3 friends, Colin being one of them. And I had money stolen out of my car, and I didn't report it. And I heard you guys kind of debate the issue on the team as to whose fault it should be. Well, the way our team was structured, and one of the circumstances of the money being stolen was, it was actually due to my negligence. It was due to me not locking the car and probably some other things. But I made a decision when I saw the money was stolen so quickly in my head that no one was ever going to know about this. At the time, I felt, you know, I don't know if you guys have felt this way, but I felt like I couldn't afford it, and I justified it in my head. And I just basically tried to move forward from that point as if it had never happened. And it worked out okay for a while. You know, I didn't tell the guys. I think it was, I'm actually fuzzy on the numbers, whether it was $8,000 or $12,000 or somewhere in between. But a huge part of my story is, in the last 11 years, I have 5 children now. And I've been talking to my daughter was 10 at the time, and I took her out. This is when we lived in Seattle, after she had caught her stealing from a grocery store. And I was talking to her about keeping secrets. And I'd realized that there was this very dark secret in my past. And I was trying to tell her how ultimately the more secrets we keep, the more we isolate ourselves from other people and ultimately from God. And this secret from my past just completely hit me like a ton of bricks. And I was like, oh my gosh, I got to tell you guys, you know? So I made appointments with all three of them over the course of the next month, and just told them the story and kind of came clean and apologized. All three of them were very gracious and understanding, and I offered to pay the money back and then some. And I don't know, it's a huge thing for me to be able to talk about that and not have this secret that, although I didn't realize it, was really identifying me. So that's the story from my perspective.
Colin, when you were on the other end of that story, on the receiving side of it, how did it go down?
Yeah, I mean, in one sense, I was surprised because it was from, you know, 8 years prior, but I wasn't shocked because I knew how easy that would be, and I never had a situation where there were three or four times in the course of the team where someone physically lost money and, you know, had to deal with that. And I listened to that show with Richard Munchkin, and, you know, there we had certain things that the team covered, but if it was basically in your possession, you were responsible for it. So that, anyway, I guess my point is that never happened to me, and I never had to deal with that, but I could understand, I could relate how easy it would be, especially in those early days where, you know, 8 or 10 or 12 grand would be, you know, everything you had. It would be really easy.
I think we all can relate to that. And so you found it easy to forgive, or?
Yeah, at that point, Ben's one of my closest friends, and we both had to forgive each other of a lot of stuff. So
good.
It's just another thing.
Well, I admire your courage to confess that and come clean.
Well, it was interesting that experience for me. I mean, there's a lot of experiences where, you know, I've screwed up in a lot of areas, but it came to be really formative as we went on to form the Blackjack team and as we evaluated other people's honesty, and we realized that the closest thing we could have were relationships. And if people said to me I could never steal, it just basically meant I didn't trust them. Because there's so many ways. I mean, what you define as stealing is so gray. You know, when you're making $800 an hour, the difference between 1 or 2 minutes on your time card, or you guys were talking about this on the show a few weeks back, and the difference between playing fewer hands or slower hands or using more cover or not, you know, there's so many things that I believe, you know, it's honesty is a very difficult thing, you know, and I don't know a truly honest person. So for us,
I honestly don't
team,
either.
So for us, running the Blackjack team became a place where we knew we instead of just saying, "Hey, everyone is honest," and let's all just pretend we are. I was one of the proudest things I was of our Blackjack team is we had numerous people come to us and admit ways that they think they had failed in integrity or honesty, and they came back and offered to make it up or just, you know, and that was a really beautiful thing for us because I believe that every team that's out there, there's stuff happening. I mean, you're kidding yourself if there's not, you know?
Yeah. I was talking, this is Colin. I was talking with Kevin Blackwood a couple of weeks ago and, you know, I was saying, you know, I don't think that our team was more dishonest than others. I just know a few people actually admitted it. There was no one's watching you.
For whatever reason, we're having trouble catching your line right now.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So so speak closer to your phone, and if it doesn't clear up, then we'll ask Ben to talk, and while you call us back again and try it again. So try it again.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes.
I was saying I was speaking with Kevin Blackwood a couple of weeks ago about this idea that I don't know that our team was particularly more dishonest. I think that temptation is probably there in every team. We just had a few people that confessed to it, and I'm sure other teams have had that too.
Now, in the movie, there was this character called Benjamin, who was ended up firing, and he had lost $50,000 or so, and it was a big point that he was not a Christian. And the movie kind of implied that the reason you decided you couldn't trust him was because he was not a Christian. Now, I've read both you writing by that and say that wasn't really what happened. So, as I understand it, Benjamin is still friends with both of you.
I would not describe it that way. We're not enemies, but he lives in Australia, and I haven't talked to him in 2 years. So, but that's the case with most of the guys on the team, for me, at least. But I guess we're Facebook friends, if that counts.
Yeah, Facebook friends, that ought to count for something. Good. So, but the fact that you decided not to terminate the relationship with Benjamin had nothing to do with whether he was a Christian or not.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a tricky question, because I don't know if I can honestly say that has nothing to do with it, but I know that I don't feel like what was represented in the documentary, everyone that I've talked to who's seen the documentary, I think walks away with an inaccurate viewpoint, is one way to say it. So the documentary goes out of its way to say Benjamin 80 was not a Christian. And there's numerous people on our team that we don't consider Christians. Benjamin is one of those people. So that, you know, that says one thing that wasn't really represented. And I don't know if the guy making the documentary understood that or knew that, because after the fact, he came back and said that was actually a surprise to him, but I'm not sure exactly how that was a surprise. Another thing was, the thing that happened was, a lot of those things in that story were true. Someone did come to us and say, I believe God is telling me that Benjamin is stealing. And then we actually went to Benjamin. It's by the way, it's really hard to know what to do with information like that.
Really? You
know, I mean, I'm a spiritual person, but I don't have dreams like that. And in one sense, I felt like, hey, I do believe in a God that does supernatural stuff, you know? So I don't know. It was hard to discount it either. So we treated it just like we would almost any other accusation. And I went and talked to Benjamin. And in the course of me talking to Benjamin, I actually got more worried about the situation, not necessarily because I thought he was stealing, because I was just less able to vouch and trust for him and represent him to the investors. And that ultimately became the reason that I told him and that I told the team as to why I let him go. And that was the primary reason.
Well,
now, there was...
That you couldn't trust him.
Correct.
Isn't there a passage in the Bible that said if God is trying to convey some message, he will give two different people the exact same message so that it can be mutually confirmed?
Well, yeah, there actually were.
And in this case, only one person received it, so that would seem dubious to me.
Well, like I said,
you didn't interview all 6 million other people on the planet, 6 billion all other people. It could be there's somebody else that got the message.
But, you know, most of these 6 billion would not have any idea about, you know, this person is stealing from the blackjack team.
I was trying to be clear. That wasn't the reason why I let him go. It was because of the one accusation. In fact, when people ask me to this day, did he steal or did he not steal? My answer is I don't know. It doesn't really matter to me. If you start a blackjack team and you don't trust people on there for any reason, I would say you should not partner with them. And I had to represent this guy to about 20 other investors. And when I put my name on that guy, I have to say I trust them. You know, that's a tough thing to say. And I could, because of his answers to the question, not because of the accusation, I stopped being able to trust them.
Okay,
good.
Another topic. So according to your movie, you guys had what seemed to me a very aggressive strategy, and you got backed off all the time. And was this deliberate, that this was just going to be a short-term venture, and when it was over, you weren't going to play anymore, therefore you didn't really care if you got backed off lots of times? Or in retrospect, do you think maybe you should have not been so aggressive?
Yeah. Can you guys hear me?
Yes. Thank you for calling back.
and I guess that... chime in a little bit on the previous question. That's what made it a little extra weird. And I, to this day, I have no evidence that Benjamin stole, nor did I feel like that was any part of my decision for him to be let go. But it is one crazy thing is it was two independent people that came separately and said the same thing. They thought Benjamin was stealing. That doesn't make me think he was stealing, but that, to answer your question, Mike, made it extra odd, or extra difficult to deal with for us. But in terms of the aggressive strategy, yeah, when we started taking on players, Ben and I remember us having a conversation of what if this could last 2 years? And then, 2 years into it, we said, what if this could last 5 years? And it ended up lasting 6 or 7 or 8 years. So when we got into it, it was a very aggressive strategy because none of us had any ambitions of playing longer. And, we were all in the SIN network and Oregon Surveillance Network and Griffin, within the first 6 months, because we didn't really care. Most of us had never been in a casino before learning to count cards, nor did we plan on hanging out in them beyond our blackjack careers. I think some people wish they would have protected their careers more, and other people, one of my friends on the team, Ford, he said the day he quit the team in 2008, he hasn't been in a casino since, so I don't think he really cared.
Yeah, and my philosophy was to just burn it down. I wanted to play blackjack until I couldn't play blackjack and then be done playing blackjack, and I don't have any regrets of that. I do not miss casinos, I'll say that.
You have a website, blackjackapprenticeship.com, which seems like apprenticeship seems like kind of a long word, but anyway, what is it all about, and is that how you make your money these days, or at least one of the ways, and what do you do, what do you offer?
Sure.
Go for it.
I wouldn't say it's a primary way we make money, but it's a source of income. The funny thing is we started that site kind of at the peak of our team. We were training so many people for our team at the time, or it would be someone wants to join the team, we hang out a bit, and we do this sort of intro to understanding EV. And we decided, well, what if we just record it? And then people can watch it. They can watch it a few times if they have questions. So we recorded it, and then we thought, we could put this on a website. This is the best, training in terms of video training in terms of what EV is and, how you actually beat blackjack. So this was back in 2007, I think. And then it kind of grew from there. That's actually why I'm not in any of the first 30 videos, because I didn't want my face on the internet or my name. And then at some point I decided I didn't really care anymore. Well, but
after the Holy Roller movie came out, and it's kind of hard.
Somewhere before there, but when I realized I wasn't really playing much anyway. We have video training. We have a forum that's growing and has a lot of professional, advanced players on there, and we've got software, and we're developing some other software. And blog posts and podcast interviews with advanced players, and just trying to build out resources, because when we started, we were on BJ21.com a lot, and I remember us being desperate to network with any other card counter. And then you meet with someone, and they actually don't really even know how to count cards that well. And so we wanted to just kind of create a place where we could give back to the card counting community in a way that it was given to us, and where we could use the training that we had had. I think we have a unique skill set that we've actually trained so many people for our team. It was probably 60 or 70. And then we started training people through the website and have trained probably another 50 or 100, maybe not 100, but 50 through the site. And so it felt like we had a unique skill and just decided to, put that out there for people.
Very good. I wish you continued success.
Well, thanks, guys.
So we are, we're going to go on to the rest of the show now. If you have a chance to hang on the line, if we run out of time, or if we run out of things to talk about before the end of the show, which is likely, we have more questions for you. But if not, we will do our normal song and dance at the end. But thank you both for coming on the air.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Michael, what did we learn tonight?
Well, what did we learn tonight?
While you're phrasing that, let me ask you, do you think Colin and Ben are wrong to become successful card counters while being active Christians?
Yeah, that's still my position.
Okay.
The way I look at it from a bigger picture is let's say that I was climbing, say, Angel's Landing in Zion National Park, and I slip, and I'm hanging on to the edge for my life. I would like to think that Ben or Colin and any Christian or anybody would have the decency to give me a hand and save my life.
But, well, I think so, too. I don't think Christianity... I think non-Christians would help you, too.
Yes, I agree. But I think, and I think we may have to give them a chance to respond to this if we have time, but it's my understanding that Christianity believes that all atheists like me and all other non-religions, that we're all going to go to hell. And you know, and so there's all these millions of people walking around, billions, that are destined to hell, and it seems like nobody really cares. You know, how often does someone knock on my door and invite me to go to their church or answer my questions about Christianity? You know, it happens maybe once a year, and it's always the same two denominations over and over again. And I really respect them for that. But I don't see Christians as a whole, you know, acting as if it's a matter of life and death to save people from the fires of hell. And the way I look at them is that, you know, they're walking around on the earth amongst all these people that are destined to hell, and they're in a casino playing cards.
Okay, well, this is getting a lot more away from gambling and towards religion than I had hoped it to be, and I
Well, I apologize to the audience, but this is something I feel strongly about, and clearly, I will let it go.
All righty. Now, while you're letting that go, what's happening on the various Wizard websites?
Well, thank you for asking. On the Wizard of Odds, I just added a page on a game called Double Action Roulette, which I hear is at the M Casino, and I saw it at the Global Gaming Expo. It's like roulette, but there's one ball and two wheels, and you can bet on either of the two wheels or a parlay bet between the two of them. I just added a page that my webmaster JB wrote, which is an optimal strategy for PyGow tiles when you're not banking. And before we had something like this, but it was basically a humongous list of thousands of hands. And now it's something that's more concise. It's still pretty long, but at least it attempts to put it in plain, simple English. And
isn't the optimal strategy not to play?
Well, not necessarily. Who knows what kind of perks you're getting for playing?
Okay.
I also added a game, a page on Super Video Hold'em Multi-Strike. And is that the right name for it? Super Video, yeah, something like that. It has such a long name. But this is a game that's been out for about a year. You don't see it too often, where you pick one of two starting hands, and then if a Texas Hold'em 7-card hand is at least a 2-pair, then you go up to level 2, and there's 4 different levels.
Uh-huh. Very good.
And on the Wizard of Vegas, sorry, I added a review of the Green Valley Ranch.
Oh, good. Okay. The South Point has more than 10,000 video poker games, returning more than 99%. That's more than anybody else. This month, they have virtual NASCAR promotion 4 times a day, Sunday through Thursday, 3:30, 4:30, 7:30, and 8:30. All players who played at least $50 coin in the previous hour are eligible. You pick one of 8 drivers, and then they have a race, which you'll see on the tiny screen right on your machine. Players who select the winning driver share in a $5,000 prize per race. I strongly suggest avoiding popular drivers such as Jeff Gordon, Jimmy Johnson, and Dale Earnhardt Jr. They have the same chance as all the other drivers, but since other people are picking their favorites, when they win, they pay off less than the drivers you've never heard of. On Halloween there, there'll be 2 times points on video poker. This coming Tuesday at noon, I'll be teaching a free class in NSU Deuces Wild. As you probably know, NSU stands for Not So Ugly and refers to a particular pay schedule that returns 99.73% with perfect play. With the 0.3 slot club they have there, it's a very slightly positive game 24/7, and you have a bigger edge on double point days, and they have mailers and the like. The following week, I'll be teaching advanced NSU. To have a chance to understand the advanced NSU class, you have to attend the regular class first. At the Palms, the Friday-Saturday night drawings this month total $100,000. At each of the drawings, 10 winners win between $100,000 and $3,000, and in a separate drawing among these same 10 people, five of them win entry into the finals on Saturday, October 27th. On that day, one player will walk away with $50,000 cash. The way I calculated, it's worth $1,875 to be on average to be called with significant variance, although there will be players who only win $100 when they're called, and they'll go, where's my other $1,775? On a personal basis, I'll be out of town on October 27th, so I'm not playing heavily for the drawing, and so I played more in September knowing this, and I'll be playing more in November knowing this. They base their mailers on an average over several months, and so if I play less in October, I need to play more other times. The play, earn, and win, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. For the first half of the month, it's going to end this Monday the 15th, has a Think Pink theme. Top prize is a Macy's gift card. And beginning Wednesday of next week, the play, earn, and win prizes have an Oktoberfest theme. So most of the prizes are alcohol. They do have a cuckoo clock. Strangely enough, they have Jameson's Irish whiskey, which seems like a weird thing to have on an Oktoberfest theme, but such is life. The VideoPoker.com free monthly contest for October will feature 100 play with Super Times Pay. That's a fun game, especially if you can get a good multiplier when you're dealt a good four of a kind. That'll take place between October 24th and 31st. If you're going to play the game, the best game to choose is the one with the highest variance, which is triple-double bonus if they offer it, double-double bonus if that's the highest variance. Our guest next week is one of my favorite people. Kelly Flynn has been the top MC in Las Vegas special events for more than 25 years. Through the years, I've been a guest that he's hosted at probably 15 different properties, maybe 100 events at 15 different properties. A large percentage of our listeners who've attended events in Las Vegas have run across Kelly. He even made cameo appearances in my two novels, Sex Lies and Video Poker, and more Sex Lies and Video Poker. I can't say that listening to Kelly next week will make you a better gambler, but I can say that you'll have a good time listening to the show. Kelly's fun. While we're on a religious theme tonight, I have a couple of related items. I have a student who just got back from an Air Force mission, and he was stationed in Afghanistan. He told me he couldn't download Gambling with an Edge from BobDancer.com because that website was censored there by the government for being a subversive gambling site. For whatever reason, WizardOfOdds.com was considered non-subversive, so that's how my friend got the podcast. Now, I'm not sure if Shaq or I should feel, which one of us should feel more prouder of this accomplishment.
The Air Force is suddenly my favorite branch of the military.
Uh-huh. Very good. Now, I also have young friends, married couple, early 20s, who happen to be Orthodox Jews. They told me they would not go into a casino between sundown Friday and sundown Saturday because that was their Sabbath. They wanted to know if that affected whether or not they could be a successful video poker professional in Las Vegas. I suggested that they probably should eliminate the Palms from their list of places to play, simply because for locals, in order to get significant enough EV, you need to attend the drawings on Friday or Saturday night. And if their religious proscribed them from being there, then they were losing out on too much and they should probably pick other places to play. At South Point, for example, it's double point days. most of them are on Monday or Sunday, or Thanksgiving is Thursday, and even the ones that end up on Friday, they'll have like 18 hours before sundown, or 4, 5, or 6 hours after sundown Saturday, if that's the day it is. So, good. All right.
By the way,
uh-huh.
I have a friend who's a very observant Orthodox Jew, and whenever he comes to Vegas on the Sabbath, he has to stay at Arizona Charlie's Decatur because he says it's the only casino within walking distance of an Orthodox synagogue. And this guy has plenty of money to stay anywhere, and it must pain him to stay there, but I admire his dedication.
Yeah, for those of you not familiar with Arizona Charlie's Decatur, it's kind of a smoky, dumpy place.
That's an understatement.
I used to teach there for a while, and they would give away free lunches, free lunch buffets, and to anybody who came to my class. And Arizona Charlie's Buffet was not one that people would eat at voluntarily twice. But we would get big crowds, a lot of them who would come from the homeless shelter at St. Vincent's. And so they had a choice to eat that day of listening to the priest give them a sermon or listen to me teach them Deuces Wild or something. And boy, I kicked that priest's butt. They just loved listening to my class. And then when they stopped giving away the free buffets, the priests all of a sudden got better attendance. All right, Colin and or Ben, are you still on the line?
I am. I'm Ben.
All right. So, Michael, did you have any response to what Michael said? Or we got about 2 minutes, or if not, we can ask you a different question.
No, I'll do it. I have a lot of respect for what Michael said. You know, I mean, I don't know, Michael. I think if more Christians thought that way, you know, I think then Jesus would act more accurately represented by what Christians even claim to believe. Now, I think the only main difference that I have is I think it's real easy to think that there are an act of things that Christians should do and shouldn't do. And I think it's actually very religious and a lot more simple. And frankly, I guess the term I would use is legalistic or narrow than what I actually think Jesus himself taught. That's the only area I would push back, but as a whole, I have a lot of respect for your concern and your question.
Well, I'll let you have the last word, and I really respect you for coming on the show and for being very honest with us.
If Max invites me to the blackjack ball this next year, will I likely see you?
Maybe Colin. I went 1 year. Colin's been left 2 or 3 years, so I don't think you'll see me, but I didn't get a chance to answer your question in terms of I have very little involvement in actually blackjack apprenticeship or any blackjack at all nowadays. I do internet marketing, and I'm an entrepreneur, so I've started another company. So blackjack is kind of a bit of a thing of the past for me, to tell you the truth.
Any chance it'll become a thing of your future, or doubtful?
Very, very doubtful. In fact, one of the questions we didn't get to, I don't know if we have another 30 seconds, but someone said, why do you hate casinos? What did they do to you? And, you know, I live in Cincinnati now, and they're building a casino here. And, you know, I'm not excited. I don't know why. I actually feel bad, a little bad for the city of Cincinnati. So that's the one time I've thought those. On opening day, heck, maybe it'd be nice to put on a costume, but I don't think I have it in me anymore.
Very good. We got 5 seconds left. Good night, everybody. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes. Thank you, Ben and Colin.
Good night.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge, with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Michael Shackelford. Archived versions of past shows may be found on bobdancer.com and wizardofodds.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Michael Shackelford are both on Facebook and welcome your input or questions. Our sponsors are the South Point Hotel Casino and Spa, the Palms Casino Resort, the website videopoker.com, and the website wizardofodds.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.